I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Carol Borden, who founded and runs Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, where she breeds, raises, trains, and places these amazing companion shepherds with people who need them, all for free. We believe all dogs can be good dogs and that dog training starts with people training. And the better you understand your dog, the better you can communicate. Carol, we recently were talking about button pushing by dogs, and you brought up a very basic, inexpensive little device called a clicker, which used to be and still is sort of woven through some dog training curriculums. Can you talk about clicker training, the whole kind of history of it as you know it, and what you think about it?
Absolutely. Basically, clicker was originally developed by a lady named Karen Cryer.
That's right.
And it was used for aquatics when they were training dolphins and things like that.
Oh.
You can't actually be up close and personal all the time with an animal like that. But you want to capture the behavior. So they learned with a click that they got a reward. They'd come back and get a fish. So after that, every time they did something they were taught to do, then there would be this click and they would come and receive their reward. So that was their positive response. And that translated over into the dog market, great moneymaker, and actually widely used. I am not a proponent of using those in our line of work because my sentiment is if you are a good trainer, you understand a dog thinks within the moment, and the moment he has successfully taken a step in the right direction on a lesson and you're rewarding him, it should be instantaneous with a treat, with love, with a good word, whatever your dog likes. You don't need a clicker. In fact, in our line of work, we work with people with disabilities. We're training dogs to do specific skills to help their individual. And we have people whose hands and arms don't work. We have many, many people who would never even be able to remember the process of grabbing the clicker, click it, then find the treat, and then finally give it to their dog. Well, now the dog's just getting a free reward because this actually took several seconds to go through the process if they even remembered it at all, or if they were even physically capable of utilizing it.
Wow.
So we don't teach it because a good trainer is immediate on recognizing that the dog just did something that they've been asking for. They just set them up for success and they accomplished a goal and they get rewarded immediately. Why do you need a clicker in the middle?
You make a really fascinating point. So you're talking about people who are physically challenged or mentally challenged, some of the recipients of your medical service dogs.
Correct.
I myself was never able to use a clicker, minus any of those overt challenges, because I was always told it's about timing. And the reason to use it is to mark the exact millisecond that the dog has begun to do or done the thing you're training them to do. Let's say you want them to first look at you, which is something you work on a lot with your baby dogs. And then you're going to teach them other things after that. So in the millisecond of looking at you, let's say you say, look at me, or you say their name, you're supposed to click. Because you theoretically would be too slow to reach in your treat bag and get the treat in that moment and hand it to them. As you say, time would have elapsed. My problem was I couldn't use the clicker very well. I couldn't make it click exactly instantaneously. And I noticed that the really good trainers were using a clicker to train people to use a clicker. But the trainers would say, yes. That's what they'd say to the dog in the moment that the dog gave them the thing they were hoping to get as a response. The trainer would go, yes, and then treat in the way you said, praise, pat, edible treat. So I thought that clickers were to train people to notice the very moment that the dog gave them the thing that they were asking for, initiated even to give that thing. Did you ever get that sense?
No, because I just skip it altogether, because in my mind, you as a trainer should be so focused on the dog and the lesson, not talking to your buddy or watching the birds fly by.
Right.
You should be paying attention to what you're asking and the very moment that the dog executes on that, there should be immediate praise, immediate reward. And it doesn't matter what the verbiage is. It's all about the tone of voice and body language and response from you that the dog is reading.
Right.
And it's, and believe me, a dog thinks longer than a millisecond. So in that millisecond that the clicker clicks, if anything, it might distract him from what he just did.
Yes. So. I mean, that's the other thing. We think, okay, we're going to clicker train. That means that the dog is going to feel rewarded by the clicker. But hello, the sound of a clicker means nothing to a dog other than what you do next. So you could just do the next thing. The clicker, we get the reward of the clicker. I swear, it's like a human thing. We get that, you often talk about classical conditioning. It seems like it conditions the person. The person who clicks, the dog trainer says to the person, yes, you did that right, human. But really, we're trying to train the dog. So the person goes, yes, I clicker trained. But that clicker has no value to a dog. And as you say, could be distracting. And to some very sound sensitive dogs, could almost be aversive. It's a sharp, quick sound. Maybe that sounds worrisome, not like a positive.
Yeah, at least in the beginning. Yeah. Now, I'm just not a proponent. It's just an extra step. It's just an artificial tool. And see, that's the basis of our training, too. We don't believe in artificial tools. Listen, by law, by federal law, our dogs are always required to have some sort of tether. So what that equates to, what that means, is a collar and leash, typically. And, if for some reason it interferes with a task that they have to do, they still have to be under a verbal command or hand signal command. And what we teach from the very beginning, again, go back to how caveman and dog became a team. They didn't have clickers. They didn't have collars and leashes.
Right.
And they didn't have any of these things. So why do we need them now? We are much more sophisticated and educated than we were back then.
For sure.
And so my belief is, let's go back to basics. Let's go full circle. Let's work with what the dog knows best. He reads our body language, our expression, our tone of voice. And this is what we premise our entire training program on. So once we put a collar and leash on a dog, literally I teach everyone, our recipients and our trainers, we train with the leash over our neck, hands off. It is nothing more than a legally required ornament. And we don't need a collar and leash or any other artificial device to have some of the highest working dogs that are out there in this world. They are saving lives every day and doing tasks to complete people's lives because they can no longer do them themselves. We don't need artificial tools to accomplish the most sophisticated tasks and jobs that exist for dogs.
That's a really good point. I was amazed, and I still sometimes think about how you teach your puppies to heal. Talk about that. It was so amazing because, healing is, I think, one of the most difficult and almost rarely accomplished, really accomplished tasks for dog owners. People get hauled around by the dog, and the dog is hauling around this big human, and it's not good for their neck, their shoulders, their trachea, because no one's ever really conquered, other than with a Belgian Malinois in a militaristic kind of, nose at left knee, no matter what, even if bombs are falling out of the sky, that kind of militaristic training. No one seems to have ever really gotten a dog to walk on that loose leash because somehow something went wrong early. What is that problem?
Well, and you're right. It's very simple. Our puppies learn all of their basic obedience before they have ever had their first collar and leash on. And what it is we just use luring techniques. We have a treat. We hold it in the position that we want the dog to learn, and he gets rewarded for being in that position, whether it's standing next to us or walking with us or sitting or down or coming. All of these different positions we entice him with the treat, and he's rewarded in that position. So it becomes a basic fundamental in his brain. I get rewarded when I'm right here. So I need to stick around. I need to be here. Yeah. And so It's very simple. Where we're laying all that foundation work, we're priming the brain, so to speak, to know that these are our desires. It's a positive thing to be where we need you to be. And listen, our dogs love working for their people so much. Yeah. They really don't want to be away from them anyway. And so all we've done is just kind of given them the rules of our game. We like you right here. Because we have a rule with service dogs. They must be within 1 foot of their person at all times.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Have to be at least 5 foot away from other dogs at all times.
Really?
And so,
wow.
Yeah. So this is really important for because they're in public all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's necessary for the dog to be close to their person, to be able to do their job, whether it's a physical job or a scent skill. And, you know, same thing with other dogs. We do not want them getting nosy with other dogs, nor
yes.
do we want other dogs approaching them, because if one of our dogs is attacked by another dog, it can damage our dog psychologically, not to mention any physical altercation.
Yep.
But it can definitely cause them some psychological issues to where they think now they have to be big and tough and be the one that barks and growls first kind of thing as a defense. And so we never want that to happen. But getting back to how our puppies actually respond to us is, again, they are born with such willing spirits. And we reward them for that every time they are where they need to be, what we want them to do. And pretty soon, all they want to do is pay attention to us. It's so interesting in the training room, if one of our trainers is practicing with a new exercise or new object, even though the puppy has the entire training room, it could run around and go visit, you know, different obstacles or toys or what have you.
Right.
That puppy is sitting, staring at the
no
trainer all
kidding.
The time. Even if the trainer gets distracted and walks away or picks up something, the puppy is watching, following, ready. It's like, okay, what do you want to ask me next? I'm right here. I'm
wow.
right here. I'm ready. And so we just inspire such a wonderful communication and work ethic with our dogs that they absolutely love their jobs. And it's so easy. Once we do put a collar and leash on them, they might scratch at it once. And
right.
That's it. None of this old fashioned nonsense of they're bucking the collar and leash and turning flips and getting dragged along. No,
yeah.
None of that goes on in our world.
Because they're already so comfortable and so confident. Yeah. Okay. I will say it's a miraculous feeling to have dogs that have that spirit, that willing spirit you refer to, and that willingness and that joy in being a person's dog. And not all of us get lucky. And whether we get a dog as a puppy or we rehome it, even rehome dogs that have had who knows what background can be just like that if you
right.
give them a chance. And others
right.
kind of blow you off. You know, there's some breeds of dogs that are bred to be independent. Whether
That's
it's
true.
Sled dogs or Rhodesian Ridgebacks that are supposed to hunt, you know, lions in the
mm-hmm.
desert,
mm-hmm.
those dogs need
yep.
to be independent and make their own decisions and check back in with you if it's convenient. But that's who they are at their
right.
you know, cellular level. So you
that's
have
correct.
To you have to know the difference. But in any case, maybe the clicker is not the solution to whatever your issues are. And it's just certainly something to stop and think about and stop and thinking about any of the tools that you might buy and try to find yourself a trainer, if you can, who helps you bypass that and find that more caveman, cave dog experience. Because at the bottom of it all, that's sort of who we are fundamentally with our dogs. Wouldn't you say, Carol?
Absolutely.
Or we'd like to be.
The genetics
are there. Exactly. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you again soon.